Hello, friends. My name is Zach, and welcome to the Enter the Danger podcast, where we have conversations to help us grow in our skill to enter into difficult conversations with kindness, empathy, and curiosity so that we can be more effective in our jobs and have deeper and more meaningful relationships. My guest this month is Dr. Terry Wager. Terry is an organizational psychologist and business strategist, as well as author of Quit Taking Your Own Bad Advice, How to Stop Overthinking and Start Following the Brilliance of Others. He helps entrepreneurs, business owners, and multi-unit franchise owners improve individual and team performance by aligning their team, as well as developing clarity and direction. He helps them gain more influence and make fast, intentional decisions that generate the rapid results for their businesses that everyone wants. He finds that healthy, functional companies are better equipped to reduce politics, confusion, and unwanted turnover, outperforming their competitors by replacing those challenges with cohesion and clarity. He and his company, Generator CC, help leaders master the disciplines of organizational health and take advantage of the benefits it provides. I really liked this conversation with Terry. I'm really looking forward to sharing it with you. And so let's jump straight into it. Hey, Terry, how you doing? Thanks so much for being here.
Good. How are you?
I am great. I'm great. Thank you. I'm really excited about the podcast. Excited you're here. I'm ready to jump straight into it if you're good to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm going to start. So if you've listened to this podcast, I'm actually changing the questions a little bit this year. I told you guys there was going to be some stuff changing. So a little bit of a different in the questions. So the first one, Terry, is what's one high impact event that shaped how you enter into conflict with other people?
Like I've said before, I have a lot of high impact events because I had a really hard time in life early. I'm actually recovering or recovered alcoholic, however you want to put it, in 12-step program. I've been sober for 28 years, but I didn't know how to actually do conflict at all. And my choice was actually to avoid conflict and avoid myself and avoid everything in a very unhealthy way for years and years and years. And my conflict moment that made me realize that I got to make changes is I got a DUI. And I mean, my life was on a downward trajectory, pretty good downward trajectory, going down, down, down. Yeah. And sitting there after the DUI, I realized I can't do this anymore and I have to do something different. And so that was a high impact event that made me realize I had to face me.
Yeah.
And face my problem. But then after that, you know, I had to go and turn myself into a 12-step program. I had to turn myself into a sponsor and admit that I was having problems. And I learned how to actually walk in and become more and more vulnerable in order to really survive and get out of misery. And so, yeah. You know, in the 12-step programs, a lot of times they talk about, well, if you don't stop drinking, you're going to die. Well, that was the least of my problems. Cause when I finally quit drinking, I wanted to die. And I mean, I wasn't suicidal, but I didn't want to be on this earth anymore in my body, in my brain, listening to my head tell me how bad things were. And so I honestly think the living in misery is worse than a fate worse than death. And that was the problem that I had, and I couldn't stand it. And I, you know, a funny joke that's in that group is like, you know, it's a real problem when you go on vacation and you have to go with you. You know, it's terrible. You're trying to take a vacation. You're with you. You can't stand you. That's a problem. And so how do you deal with that? And so I had to learn how to actually deal with my own conflict internally. And that was a major thing for me that helped me to realize that, one, everybody has conflict. And two, that we got to actually become vulnerable and turn ourselves into the conflict or enter the danger and become vulnerable and open to put ourselves on display, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, thank you for sharing that. We've said a few times, I think, on the podcast that the most difficult person to enter the danger with is ourselves.
Oh, absolutely.
It's
absolutely. When I'm actually working with a team or working with an executive team or a CEO or those different people I work with, one of the first things that I really help them to understand is vulnerability-based trust, which is the essence of how to start building a team. And it's the foundation of really becoming functional in a group is not about trusting other people, but it's trusting that you're going to be okay saying what's on your mind or saying what's on your heart and being open. And too many people think that the trust is between other people. It's not. That comes automatically when you trust yourself.
Yeah.
And so many people are like worried about, oh man, maybe Zach won't listen to me or agree with me or, it doesn't matter if Zach agrees with me. It matters that I agree with me. And then I can sit in the discomfort, in the conflict while I say what I'm experiencing, what I'm believing, what I'm thinking, and ask your perspective and then be open to the fact that I might not have all the facts.
Yeah.
And when I can do that, now we can have a really good conversation. And that's, to me, what really entering the danger of that conflict is really start to get into, okay, hey, I don't have all the answers and I'm afraid you won't agree with me, but I'm going to put it out there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I love that. Everything you just said, that was great. I'm going to come back to that. I do want to finish these three intro questions because I like to get them, but that's, I think you just touched on something that's really powerful there. So second question is, who's one high impact person that's helped you enter into conflict more consistently and in a more healthy way?
That's a great question. There's a lot of dead people that have impacted me greatly. I'm sort of kidding, but not really. In the 12-step program I was talking about, there's a couple of key speakers that were out there on the circuits that really helped me to kind of shape how I think about things. But if I was going to say the most impactful was a guy by the name of Mark Lubin. And okay. Mark Lubin is a doctor of psychology, and he was running the department at my school, Argosy University, which is now closed down. But he had an amazing psychology department, and his background was in the Chicago orthogenic psychology. I can't remember the name of it, but he worked with a guy named Dr. Bruno Bettelheim early in the 60s. And that guy's, if you look those names up, pretty amazing people. But he actually, I had a couple of classes with him, and what he really helped me to realize is that nobody is defensive. You know how you say, oh, you know what, Zach, I think you're being a little defensive there.
Yeah.
He said, nobody's defensive. Hmm. They're all protecting themselves. And we have to honor them and appreciate them for valuing themselves enough to protect themselves. It's just the biggest problem is they're protecting themselves when they should be more vulnerable.
Hmm.
And so the biggest problem that people have that creates mental health issues or lack of communication or communication issues or even resistance is that we're protecting ourselves when we're not in danger.
Hmm.
And I mean that I could go on and on and on about the different things that I learned from Mark Lubin, because like I said, he was a psychodynamic psychologist. He helped me to really look at the person's personality vulnerabilities. And I don't mean like personality traits, but the different things that happen to them within their own growing up self to create that level of protection, as well as their situational and social vulnerabilities, what happened in their environment that contributed it. And when you start thinking about people in that nature of their own personality and their own temperament, along with what happened in their life and the way that they end up protecting themselves, it makes a whole lot more sense why they're protecting themselves. And I don't get mad at people when they do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't get triggered by that because Dr. Lubin, when he showed me that, and I mean, you know, not everybody has gone to, you know, the length to understand people and to get educated in a doctoral program the way I did. But if you step back and just go, okay, if I took those two little points and went, okay, people aren't defensive, they're protecting themselves. And they're protecting themselves because all of their life, they had this temperament, they had this emotional stuff going on. At the same time, they had these social things. Now you put those together and it really makes it understandable why somebody's showing up the way they're showing up.
Yeah.
And just in the fact that we accept that and understand that they're showing up the way they're showing up, not because of me, but because of the historical vulnerabilities. Oh, okay, great. So let me learn more about you while you're resisting, while you're protecting yourself, and understand what's going on that makes you feel like you want to. And all of that is curiosity.
Yep. I've got about a half dozen questions again
we'll
for that.
We'll put a pin in that one.
Yeah, too. We will. Can you share a story, and you kind of already did in there, but can you share a story about how Mark Lubin, I was going to say about Mark Lubin, the typical question is about them entering the danger with you, but do you have a story about how he has entered the danger of conflict with you?
Yeah, you know, I not so much him, but I mean, I've had many others. But really, I've had people enter the danger by just straight up bringing my attention to things. You know, I had a what they call a sponsor in this 12-step program, and I met him, and I'm listening to him, and I'm talking with him about him. Maybe, you know, I'm interviewing him to be a sponsor, and he turns to me and goes, "You got a big ego. Why would you wound me like that?" It was like punch in the face.
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Whoa, what? Why would you say that to me?" And he goes, "I want you to answer one question, and this might actually help you see what I'm talking about." And he goes, "When's the last time you did something for the 12-step program you're in?" You know what? I said that wrong. I blew it. I totally ruined the joke or ruined the moment. But I'll back up. He goes, "When's the last time you did something, accomplished something?" And I was like, "I just got my doctorate 6 months ago."
Yeah.
Right. This is back when I got my doctorate. And I did this and I did this. And then he goes, "What have you done for the 12-step program?" Ooh. Now you got to realize that anybody in the 12-step program, as deeply as I am, as connected as I am, is a central part of it is giving back what you've freely gotten. Right. And I'm like, "Oh crap." And then he parlayed it with, "What have you done for him today?" Because one of the tenets of that program is we have a daily reprieve based on our spiritual condition, which means based on how much we're giving back and how much we're present and how much we're a part of. And the funny thing is, I've been so focused on my doctorate and my dissertation and all of the grandiose things that I was doing that are very necessary and very important. But I didn't realize that I had forgotten the basics, and I didn't realize that part of why I was going to him is because I wasn't happy. I had a lot of things going on, and my happiness, while not an emotion, I didn't have the joy that I usually have because I wasn't doing the giving back piece.
Yeah.
And it was like that, confrontational. It's like, whoa. And so I've had, you know, and I've had even more uncomfortable confrontations, and I've had less discomfort in confrontations. But one of the things that I learned a long time ago is it doesn't matter how it starts as long as people stand their ground from a compassionate, caring, curious place.
It doesn't matter where it starts as long as people stand their ground from a compassionate, curious place.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got to be compassionate. Mm-hmm. They got to be curious. They got to have a good sense of humor about themselves. They got to be accepting of where you're at. You know, I'm accepting of where people at when I bring attention to what's not working for them. But, you know, the compassion is about curiosity and empathy. Right. And so,
yeah.
And we got to understand that people are protecting themselves. And the reality is when that sponsor guy did that with me, I was protecting myself by paying attention to all of these great things I was doing when I was letting something slide and I wasn't paying attention to that.
Yeah. So is this, I'm going to jump back a little bit.
Yeah.
Cause kind of, I think it ties in here, where you're saying you were protecting yourself. Do we need to be less, maybe self-centered when we are looking to enter the danger with other people?
Absolutely. I think that everybody in the world needs to be a little bit less self-centered, and at the same time, you know, at the same time, selfish, but not in a selfish way. But really, we need to be caring for ourselves, not in a self-love way, but really emotionally and rigorously honest with ourselves about our emotions and what's triggered when it's triggered. Because a lot of times people get triggered, they don't know they're triggered, and then they start something with themselves without realizing that what they're doing is they're having their own little moment arguing with their ego, and then they bring that into a situation and ruin somebody else's day with it.
Yeah. So do you think it's it might be possible, how difficult would it be if I'm not honest with myself, which can happen for so many different reasons, I'm sure. But if I'm not honest with myself, how difficult is it going to be for me to enter into conflicts in a healthy way when I'm coming with all this stuff that's aimed at other people?
It ain't a walk in the park, that's for sure. Right. And the fact of the matter is there's two truths in what I'm about to say. Number one, nobody is in a healthy, balanced emotional place all the time.
Yep.
Or even most of the time.
Yep.
The other truth is all it takes is that realization that I'm triggered, and to take a half a second to identify what emotions were triggered and how. And I teach people how to actually identify their emotions in a quick, easy way that they can really re-regulate, I guess would be re-regulate emotions, so that they can reset and go back in the moment. But a lot of times people, I don't know if you've ever seen somebody in negotiations or somebody in a contentious kind of dangerous conversation that shuts down or they explode. What happened is they got emotionally triggered and they didn't know how to re-regulate.
Yep.
And so as a result, they shut down, and they're shut down for, you know, a minute or two or four. And then you're like, are you all right? And then they're like, yeah, I was just thinking about something else. I needed a moment. And yeah. Like, great that you'd recognize you need a moment. Did you use that moment to re-regulate, or did you use that moment to stuff?
Yeah.
And most people use the moment to stuff.
Yeah.
And they play a little head game with themselves. And okay, I'm back. And then you can trigger them again. And
yeah.
I don't do it so much anymore. I don't, maybe I do. But I used to trigger and re-trigger and re-trigger and re-trigger until they blow up. And I go, okay, what's going on?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. And then that's the work that I'd focus on, you know,
right.
When I was a therapist, I did a lot, especially I worked for years in a correctional facility as a correctional psychologist. And they love to play the game that they've either got this handled or they've learned a lot and they're not upset anymore. You can let me out now.
Yep.
And so I just sit there and see, you're not ready. And it was my job to actually decide readiness for a lot of these guys to get out, or if they're ready to go up to the parole board or whatever. And I just sit there and scratch.
Yep.
and they explode. And the funny thing is we all have that protective system that we create this facade of, yeah, I'm okay. Hey,
yeah,
how's it going?
You yeah.
know, hey, we're just going to get this done. And I hope nobody brings up anything that's going to bother me.
Yeah.
And then we all have this artificial harmony that, yeah. that we live in, because honestly, what we're all going to do is we're going to come into this meeting, or we're going to come into this business, and we're all going to agree without saying that we agree to not step on each other, not trigger each other, not upset each other, and also commit to something.
Yep.
It ain't going to happen.
Yep.
We cannot gain commitment if we don't enter the danger like we're talking about. We can't enter conflict, or we can't create commitment without conflict.
Yep.
We have to have an understanding where we're at. And conflict isn't bad unless we go in unaware of what's going on. And a guy named Cody Thompson, who works at a table group, said an amazing line that I heard a couple of years ago, and it's just stuck with me. Because somebody asked him, what is the best leader? And the, you know, that idea of if you're using a disc, is it a D? Is it a C? Is it an I? If you're using, you know, the 16PF, is it the ENFP? Or who is the best leader? And he said the best leader is a self-aware leader.
Mm.
And it is so powerful. And I love him for saying that, because that's the truth of all truths. Is it does not matter what your personality profile says.
Yeah.
It matters if you are aware of, maybe you're not aware of what's in the blind spot, because the blind spot, you're aware you have a blind spot.
Right.
And then right. I need you to talk to me about it. And I need you to bring to my attention where I'm missing stuff.
Yep.
And that's one of the big things when I'm working with people, I use this idea of, we don't call anybody out on things that they're missing. We bring it to their attention. But things that they're hitting hard and they're doing really well and they're achieving it, we call them out on that. But we call out the achievements and we bring to attention the things that they mess up with. And so it's like, bring to attention that we're off the mark. Because, well, I want somebody to bring to attention if my zipper's down in public or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I want that brought to my attention, but I don't want to be called out in a group.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And so we call it out in the group when people are doing awesome, but we bring it to the attention of the person when they're off track. And we can definitely bring it to the attention in the group. But the whole idea is, hey, is this how you wanted to do this? Or are we off track?
Yeah.
That's bringing it to attention. Calling it out and say, hey, I just saw what you did. And really, Those are two things that I really think about, especially in conflict, is we want to bring things to the attention and talk about them, because the more we talk about everything, the easier it is when we run into troubled times to be able to talk about the things that are uncomfortable.
So, this is a little bit more towards the earlier part of what you're saying, but I'm going to tell a story to see if I'm kind of on the right track. I went to the grocery store with my daughter, and we were pushing down the aisle, and we were halfway through, like crossing the aisles, you know, where the tea is, and this mom and her daughter is about to, like, they wanted to come out. And so my daughter starts pulling back on the trolley, and I'm like, let's cross quickly. Like, and so I said, Lissy, let's go quickly, because she's pushing the trolley. So she's trying to pull, because she loves to do it. So she's pulling the trolley back, trying to back up. And I'm thinking, Lucy, we got to go. This is going to be so much quicker if we go. So I'm pushing her. She gets really frustrated with me, says I quit, and walks off. Anyway, we have a conversation about it afterwards. Turns out she was trying to back up because she wanted the other family to go first. She's like, Dad, I want to let them go first. But to kind of bring this back to the point, like, I was trying to talk with her about, okay, so what are the emotions that you're experiencing? Because that helps me know, like, why are you trying to come backwards? What's the... And so she said, Dad, I'm really frustrated. I want to come back. But she just didn't have words for the emotions. She's five. She's 5 years old. She doesn't have emotions right. yet. She's learning them. But if I'm hearing you right, then in a lot of ways, this is essentially what we keep doing even up to adulthood, we have to keep being willing to say, we have to be keep being willing to identifying our emotions and what they are, saying, oh, why am I reacting this way? What's going on? Oh, I'm frustrated. And in a sense, that doesn't really stop.
And no, it doesn't. And in fact, I will one up that, not to one up anybody, but this is actually my area of expertise, especially in emotional vulnerability, is really, I come from an attachment place. And so attachment psychology and understanding how attachment works, which my definition of attachment is probably not the dictionary definition, but the way I define it that people can really get quickly is the overwhelming desire to connect with people while at the same time competing in conflict with the overwhelming fear of rejection.
Hmm.
And so the overwhelming desire to connect while fearing complete rejection.
Yeah.
And every one of us have that. And it's that high wire that, you know, the best relationships are created out of, because I really want them to like me, but I really want to make sure that, you know, and so, you know, girl guy relationships and all, but we all go through it no matter who we're dealing with. I want them to like me.
Yeah.
But if they don't like me, I'm going to reject them first because I don't want to be rejected.
Right.
Right. So if you don't like me, well, you know what? I didn't like him either.
Yeah.
And so we play that game. And so it's important to understand that idea of attachment. But then getting back to the emotion and behavior are very, very different. And our language has confused the crap out of them.
Hmm.
Emotion, the way I explain it, emotion as an internal experience of a moment. The behavior is the reaction. And so for me, frustration is a reaction.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just like if you have a little volcano and you have baking soda in there and you put a little bit of vinegar in there, like a drop or two of vinegar in there, you get frustration, and you can, if you look at it, you see bubbling.
Yep.
Right. But if you put a lot of vinegar in there, you see it bubbling over.
Yep.
Right. So frustration, anger, rage. All different levels of anger, but anger is a behavior, while feeling powerlessness is the emotion or the baking soda, so to speak.
Mm.
And so she got frustrated because she was feeling powerless.
Mm.
And then she was feeling embarrassed because you were doing something other than what she was doing. And then she may have even felt shame around the of not being able to let them go first.
Yeah.
Maybe even disappointed or robbed of joy because she wanted to allow them to go for it. Right. And so when I start looking at this, like, oh shit, there was so many emotions going on.
Oops. Yeah.
And so really being able to identify those.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I actually had a friend of mine talk about Inside Out this morning with me. Like,
right.
It's a great movie, right? No, it's terrible. The concept of the movie is great. But I honestly believe that it's really, really not good for two reasons. One, they have anger as an emotion when it's not. Hmm. And then they mix up the emotion. Happy is not an emotion. Happy is the behavior of joy.
Yeah.
Right. And so we see somebody happy. We can see it. We can identify it. We can see it. But I'm joyous right now, but you couldn't tell.
Right.
Right. I'm also passionate. You can tell that, but
yeah,
because you see my behavior of how I'm showing up.
Yeah.
The behavior is the show up, the internal experience of the emotion. You can't see, we can't see somebody lonely.
Yep.
We can see from their behavior that we get clues of what it might be. And our job as partners in this world with other people is to help people identify the emotions that we're blind to,
because
the cruel joke I think that's been played on the human being by whatever God created this is that I can't identify my emotions alone.
Mm.
And especially like kids, you said it, they don't have the language for it, right?
Yeah.
But then as parents, we mess up their language because we teach them the wrong language that we know.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, calling a dinner plate the garbage, right? Go get the garbage. They bring the garbage. You're like, wait, I said garbage. That's what I got you. We're all confused.
Yep.
So, like, why do you keep bringing that? I said garbage. It's a plate.
Yeah.
our language is wrong.
Yeah.
So we got to get right around our language. And so identify powerlessness, identify shame. People love to talk about guilt. Guilt is a behavior. Hmm. Guilt is a finding, not a feeling, right?
Hmm.
I am guilty of doing that.
Hmm.
I feel shameful because I did it.
Right.
Or I feel shameful because they saw me do it, which is worse.
Right. Right.
If nobody saw it, it's not a big deal. But if saw it, I feel shame.
Right? Yeah.
And so when we get that clean and we get that really clear, we have communication at an even higher level of who does what when.
Yeah.
Or why they wanted to do it this way and I wanted to do it this way.
Mm.
When we get into the emotion, oh, I wanted to do it this way because I would have felt joy and I would have felt connection and I would have felt empowerment doing it that way.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. I didn't realize that. If I knew that's why you were doing it, I would have never pushed you forward.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you for sharing that. Let me know next time that you want to do something like that so we can be on the same page.
Yep.
Boom. Totally different experience.
Yep.
Right?
So is it up to like in this, and keep using this situation, I'm the dad, obviously. Is it completely my responsibility? The analogy breaks down a little bit because she's five and I'm her dad. So yes, it's my responsibility, but is it completely my responsibility to make sure that environment is like, if it was the same situation and that in a workplace, for instance, and I'm the leader, is it completely my responsibility to make sure that that is there? Like how much of it rests on the individual
now,
and being willing to express their emotions?
Like this is, I feel like this is like a straw hat. Yes. Or a straw man or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's always the leadership responsibility.
Yeah.
However, the leadership responsibility, I don't define leader as the guy with the title CEO.
Yeah.
I define leader as the one that's most self-aware.
Yep. I like that.
And so I go into a lot of situations where I have a level of awareness because I've worked on this, and I am not by any means saying that I don't get triggered by my emotions, but I do notice when I get triggered by them quite quickly.
Yeah.
And I'll put my hand up and go, wow, I just had a reaction that was just not okay. I got a funny story that's really quick. It's like, I was at airport coming home from a trip that trip or whatever. But I took these cookies from the airport lounge and I took them home and I was going to eat them. And then Christine, we were going back to her mom's house because she was watching our cats. So Christine gives one to her mom and I came unglued over a freaking cookie.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't believe I did that.
Yeah.
And in the moment, I was like, why are you giving my stuff away? That's a freaking cookie that I got for free. But I got triggered.
Yeah.
Right. And I didn't necessarily get triggered because of the cookie. And I didn't get triggered because I was selfish. I got triggered because I wasn't asked or you know, there was no appreciation for the thing in the moment.
Yep.
And I felt powerless for that second.
Yep.
And I felt disappointed. And then because of that, I felt a loss and then disconnected. Right.
Yep.
And then immediately after that, I was like, I don't know what the heck that was about. I am really sorry. You can have all the cookies. Just take them all.
Yep.
And, you know, then I felt shame. And shame is actually a good thing if it's not pervasive, because shame is the emotion that gets us to want to repair the harm.
Yep.
And so I was wrong. I should have never reacted like that. I can't take it back, but I can tell you that you can have more cookies than that.
Mm. Right.
I don't know why I tripped out.
Right.
And just telling on yourself is the biggest way that we can, you know, own our mistake.
Yep.
And so, you know, everybody has those moments. And so we need grace to allow that moment to happen and allow the forgiveness. And I also have this idea that we don't forgive people. We allow the forgiveness through us because I'm not God. But it's really, we allow people to be forgiven and allow them to reset and allow things to happen. Or I can be the stopper of it.
Yep.
And so that's the idea. But really for leaders, for parents, it really is important for them to be the people that are guiding this journey into vulnerability.
Yeah. So something you said and they kind of stood out to me where, and I might not get this exactly right, but when we have shame, that's a good thing because it helps us fix or repair. It is the inability to, over the long time, have consistent, healthy conflict a result of that shame and the fact that it's there and then we don't do anything to fix it. And so because that shame is there, it kind of increases. Is there any, like, cause that's kind of a thought I had in my mind is that, does that play a role?
Yeah, actually, shame is a very, very, dividing emotion. And it also, and one of the, I don't remember the name of the book, but somebody talks about pervasive shame. And there's one of my mentors, a guy named Danny Hughes, talked a lot about pervasive shame with attachment disordered kids. And basically, shame is not a problem. Shame is curative. But pervasive shame causes us to basically hide from people, lie, do stuff to avoid. And shame is one of the leading emotions that causes us to go off track and to start trying to get our needs met without actually stating our needs.
Yeah.
Because shame is also connected very strongly to rejection. And so if I'm feeling shameful, I've already rejected myself. So I think you're going to too. And so now I'm going to move into manipulation and control.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Hey, I'm trying to balance. We're almost out of time and we need to start wrapping up and I still got about 600 questions I want to ask. Maybe I'll just have to have you come back again in 6 months or so. Okay. I've got a lightning. Yes. Thank you for being here, by the way.
Absolutely.
We are going to wrap up. I've got a lightning round. I'd love to ask you if you're willing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Your favorite leadership quote, by the way, before you actually answer that, I say it's a lightning round. Most of these questions aren't really good lightning round questions. So take that with a grain of salt, that it's actually a lightning round. Your favorite leadership quote?
Honestly, I don't know if this is a leadership quote or just a cool quote, but an unexamined life is not worth living. And Socrates said that.
What is one underrated skill in leadership?
You know, everybody loves to say listening, but I think identifying emotions.
Mm. Your favorite author?
My favorite author? Do I have to say Pat Lencioni? No, I'm just kidding.
No, yeah.
Me. Just no, I'm just kidding again. I think that, my favorite author. I like Chuck Swindoll. I like the way he wrote a book called Grace Awakening. But, there's so many good books out there. You know, here you go. Grace Awakening, if you're talking about spiritual, I love that book. But I think my favorite author to read is going to sound really ridiculous, but Grant Cardone.
Okay.
He is so in your face and so matter of fact with what he says. Another highlight I like the in your face people. I guess like conflict. But Larry Winget is another one that I love that guy.
Okay. The most frustrating excuse someone can make for not entering the danger.
The most frustrating excuse? Like I said, I don't really have a frustrating excuse that frustrates me because Mark Lubin ruined that for me.
Right.
The idea of people protecting. And so no matter what excuse it is, they're protecting themselves and I know it.
Yeah.
I think rather than frustrating, I'd say disappointing.
Yeah.
Is that I just don't have time for that right now would probably be.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I see that in the put off. Until later. And
yeah.
I see in people wanting to fix their business and consultant, you know, asking a consultant to help them fix their business. And they go, you know what? I really like what you're saying, but I really want to work on this first. And then I want to work on that because then is never going to come.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably the most disappointing aspect of people not realizing how much money in their business they just burned by putting it off.
Yeah. Your favorite question to ask other people.
What was that like for you?
What's something that you do to make sure you're always learning?
Get into something I know nothing about.
I love that. You can't say this one. What is your favorite podcast?
My favorite podcast?
You can't say this one, by the way, because obviously this is your favorite. Duh.
Right.
So,
and I can't say whatever the name of mine is that I've been doing because I can't remember the name of it. fairly new. I think that I actually do like what's the table groups? I don't remember.
At the Table.
At the Table. I like At the Table a lot. I don't listen to it much, but I do like listening to Joe Rogan be crazy.
Okay.
There's so many out there.
Yep. That's great. A book that you keep rereading.
How to Win Friends and Influence People is one that I reread a lot. And then another one that's recovery centered that I absolutely love. And I even I have it on my desk right now, funny enough. I created a little this is the table of contents that I just wrote all over.
Yeah.
So many good things, but it's called A New Pair of Glasses by Chuck Chamberlain.
By the way, none of you guys are gonna be able to see this, but he opened the book and quite literally it was covered with notes. Just absolutely covered. So
and page numbers next to the note.
Yeah.
But I didn't do it in any kind of sequence. That's how I sequence stuff. So you don't want me to organize your sock drawer. That's for sure.
great. What's a quality you see in others that makes you excited to get to know them?
A sense of humor.
Your favorite way to build trust with other people?
Just be honest about my struggles. Be honest about my vulnerability. You know, I often start off with the idea that I've had a lot of struggles. I've had alcohol problem, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Just being honest about my problems is what I think is.
Yeah. How does gratitude impact your life?
Well, if I had more, it'd probably be better. I'm pretty ungrateful a lot. I look at the bucket as half empty most of the time. Mm. It's an ailment that I ask God to remove constantly. Gratitude is there's a lot of different things that I say about it. It's very much like humility, and the jokes about humility is like, if you say you're humble, you're not. I think that if you talk too much about how grateful you are, you're lying. And I really think that my sponsor that I talked about that called me out on my ego, or brought to my attention that I was living in ego a little too much, to put it in a better way, he helped me to see that gratitude is more of a behavior. The you see gratitude by what you do.
And so,
how many people you help, how many people you touch, how you give back to your world instead of just going, oh, I'm so grateful for this and that.
Yeah.
How are you showing it?
Yeah.
Because I believe gratitude is an emotion and we do feel gratitude, but we can also say, hey, I feel gratitude and I'm not doing anything to prove it.
Mm-hmm. How do you stay sharp at work?
Lots of coffee.
What do you do to rest?
Stop drinking coffee.
Okay.
Now, stay sharp at work. Honestly, I'm a galvanizer, and so a discerner galvanizer. So to stay sharp at work a lot, besides the coffee, I really like getting into what other people are doing and discerning that stuff.
Yeah.
And then galvanizing people around what's next.
Yeah.
That really gets me going. And then I think that I got a hot tub.
And yep.
That's one way that I like to relax.
Yep.
We take a walk when it's nice out, we take a walk around our neighborhood, and that's a relaxing kind of thing.
Yep.
Those are the types of things that I do.
Last question, Terry, is white chocolate really chocolate?
Absolutely.
Okay. Definitive. Definitive. Hey, again, I really, really appreciate you being on the podcast. I've had a blast. I've learned a lot.
Is there anything? Even if white chocolate isn't really white chocolate, it is to me.
that's all that matters. are you working on anything? I know you said you've got a podcast. Are you working on anything you want to shout out?
I do a live stream every on. You can catch it on Facebook. You catch it on YouTube. You catch it on LinkedIn every Thursday at noon. So it actually just happened about an hour ago. You can watch the replay. And follow me on LinkedIn and Facebook and YouTube, especially. I want to build that channel. Those are different places that I am. And then I do, every Monday at 11 a.m. I'm doing a live stream with our friend Doug Cothey. And that's super fun. I think it's 11:30 a.m. And depending on, if our call goes long, when we're doing our organizational health stuff. And then I'm generatorcc.com is my website. You can find me there. And I got a lot of different stuff going on.
Awesome. I will put links to both your podcast. So your podcast and then a live stream that you do with Doug. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
I'll make sure that both those links are in the show notes. And a link to your website, Terry. Can I put your email in there too?
Absolutely.
Great. I'll put Terry's email if you want to reach out to Terry. Anything else you want to shout out before we leave?
Shout out you for having me on and all the work you do with organizational health and what you give to the Organizational Health Collective. We really appreciate what you're doing there too. It takes a village to build a village, I guess. I'm just super excited to have our relationship and see that thing growing and seeing the tide of organizational health taking over.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks, Terry. I appreciate it. And I'll catch you later.
Absolutely.
What an awesome conversation. I loved every minute of that. Thank you, Terry, so much for joining me this month on the podcast. I know that everyone's going to get a lot of wisdom out of this conversation. And I really appreciate your time. My guest next month is actually going to be someone that I was hoping to have on the podcast last year, but it didn't work out. Her name is Jacqueline Almeida, so I really hope you're going to come back and join me next time for my conversation with Jacqueline. Again, these episodes are going to be dropping on the last Wednesday of the month, so last Wednesday of April, my conversation with Jacqueline will be out. Thank you all so much for joining me this month on the Enter the Danger podcast. I really appreciate you being here with me, and I'm grateful for your time. If you enjoyed the podcast, I'd also appreciate it if you left a review or rated it wherever you consume your podcasts. But more than that, I'd really appreciate it if you shared the podcast with someone else. If you have any advice to me, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at Zach, that's Z-A-C, at zwilcoxconsulting.com. That's also my website, zwilcoxconsulting.com, or you could call me at 559-387-6436. I also take texts if you don't like to call. Or if you just want to talk about entering the danger as well and what that means, how to implement that in a better way in your own life, please let me know. I'd love to connect and chat. I love meeting new people. I love talking about this topic of entering the danger. Thank you, friends, for being here again. Until next time, let's remember to choose kindness, empathy, and curiosity.